Hello and welcome to Uncanny, the unofficial X-Men 97 podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Condon, and today we're going to be going over the two released episodes that just came out today, March 20th, 2024. And I'm just so excited to talk about this series. It is like beyond exciting to even be able to even vocalize the fact that there's new OG X-Men animation episodes that are being brought out by Marvel Studios to just mention. You know, as someone myself who, you know, was raised in the 90s, I mean, this is my cup of tea. This is my ball of wax. You know, X-Men was, for me, everything growing up. Like, it formulated so much of my worldview and what I do for a career. You know, I'm a documentary filmmaker, a teacher, a podcast producer, and most of the work I've done professionally has been in social justice, right? Economic justice, environmental justice. And X-Men has always been, and will always be, hopefully, about bringing awareness to social issues. And I just love seeing the showrunners who reboot the series go there and be honest about it and be upfront about it and use terms and tropes and images that confront it. So we're going to get into that. We're going to get into all the nuances of who are the characters and why they're important and what they represent. This show picks up exactly where the series left off way back when, right? We are coming off of the death of Charles Xavier, right? At the hands of a essentially white nationalist who hates mutants and considers mutants as the ultimate other who need to be eradicated as a challenge to humanity, right? As the quote, next stage in evolution, this gentleman saw it as a threat, right? This gentleman, Henry Gyrich, right? So he assassinated Xavier, and we were left kind of picking up the pieces, you know, when the animation ran its course and ended. Now we see the X-Men confronting these vestiges of Gyrich, the Friends of Humanity, right? Who are these, again, neo-Nazi, racist, angry, you know, mob-minded people, predominantly white, right? Because let's try to mince what's going on here. And they're trying to carry out this person's will, even though the guy's been imprisoned. And so we see our OG classic X-Men, Aurora Monroe, Storm, who's from Africa. She was born in Africa. We see Bishop, who is an African-American, come in, helping her out, fighting side by side, as the Friends of Humanity are discovered hoarding and collecting Sentinel tech. So the Sentinels were developed by Bolivar Trask, who is a military industrialist who worked with other scientists to develop mutant technology, essentially technology that identifies mutants and technology that can uniquely target mutants, right? So that was Bolivar Trask's whole thing. And he developed these giant robots called Sentinels that the X-Men, as we come into this series, know very much about. Since in the first episode of the original series, the Sentinels are introduced, right? This concept is introduced. And now we see our, again, OG X-Men, for example, Cyclops, Scott Summers, who was part of the original team of X-Men, which included Iceman, or Robert Drake, Jean Grey, namesake Jean Grey, Beast in Hank McCoy or Henry McCoy, Angel in Warren Worthington III, and Scott Summers, aka Cyclops, the original X-Men class. So, you know, Scott comes in, he you know, kicks some ass, takes some names. You know, we see his powers displayed in a way that we've never seen. We see his powers displayed in a way that we've never seen so far in the series or even in live action. You know, Scott coming down from the ceiling of this attack and stopping his momentum using his optic blasts, right? Again, optic blast. Scott Summers has the ability to produce bolts of force from his eyes. And due to a concussion that he sustains while saving his brother after being ejected from a plane by his parents as the plane was going down, parachute catches fire. Scott hits his head on the ground, saves his brother Alex, who also is a mutant. But Scott then can't control this ability to channel solar energy and then produce it from his eyes as optic blasts, as energy, as force. So again, that's Cyclops. We also see a couple other characters that we've seen before, you know, as we're introduced to them. So namely, we see Remy LeBeau, or Gambit, who's a great character. Remy was a mainstay within the original series, a fan favorite because he's very debonair. He has a very carefree attitude, very attractive, very sexy. I'm going to use the term. Yes, he's sexy. He's a cool character. And he has the ability to turn potential energy into kinetic energy. So he basically can energize an object with, with kinetic energy that then explodes. So that's kind of his power. He's also a skilled thief, and he's a skilled martial artist. Now, we also then see introduced another fan favorite character and my sister's favorite character, Rogue, or Anna Marie, who is a mutant whose ability is very unique because Rogue, she was born with the ability to transfer energy and memory when she has skin-to-skin contact. Now, this for her is very traumatic because, as you can imagine, if you can absorb the life energy and the memory of somebody, right, whenever you touch them, skin-to-skin contact, mouth-to-mouth, anything, you know, you have to be super careful all the time, super conscious all the time. You can see there are bags under her eyes in the show. Again, I think these little touches are huge because her power set must be absolutely exhausting. To have to be consciously and constantly vigilant for who you're around, who you could come in contact to. And when she physically touches another mutant, she absorbs not only their memory and their energy, but their power set for a brief period of time. Unless she holds on too long, and then it's permanent. So that's Rogue. Rogue is a great character. And then we see a character that has been reimagined for the series. And I think reimagined in a way that I really love. And that is Morph. So Morph is a character who was introduced in the first episode of the original X-Men animation series. But he was someone who had a tragic end in the first three episodes. You know, but we see here that there's a new Morph. And the new Morph is very flamboyant and very enigmatic and very lively and upbeat and has a sense of humor and is reflective of the Morph in the comics, right? So Morph and the way that Morph looks, you know, his almost chameleon-like skin, I mean chameleon as in the character from Spider-Man, you know, very, very opaque and gray, that is what Morph looks like, the mutant Morph from the comics. So there, again, Marvel is being very self-reflective and self-evident in the choices they're making around the characters they're introducing. And that also includes Roberto de Costa, who Sunspot. Oh, I love Sunspot. Sunspot. So Roberto de Costa is a character that we see introduced who has been kidnapped by the Friends of Humanity early in the first episode. And Roberto de Costa, he is from a very wealthy family who doesn't know that he's a mutant. And he is the heir of this huge fortune and business enterprise, right? Think like Mark Zuckerberg. If Mark Zuckerberg had a kid, that would be Roberto. So, you know, this kid is very, very affluent. He's very, very, let's just say, a part of a certain class of young people who can afford to hide their identity, right? Who have the means to be able to kind of fly under the radar, so to speak, right? And, you know, this has a, you know, undercurrent and subtext, you know, for those who are in the queer community who may be able to pass as straight, right? Or those who are of a mixed ethnic class who can pass as white, right? Roberto, because of his affluence, because of his wealth, is able to hide the fact that he's a mutant, right? He's able to afford technology and cosmetics and all this to hide that he's a mutant. He has the means to hide, right? That's not a means that everyone has. And he can, you know, jokingly buy his way out, right, of capture by these, you know, racial zealots, the Friends of Humanity, who, you know, kind of mock him and say, it's not money, boy. Why? Because they want to exterminate him. They're committing genocide. These are, again, white nationalists, right? They're racists who are committing genocide. That's what this show's about, kids. Hey, welcome to the X-Men. So, you know, Roberto is going to be a mainstay in the series. He has the ability to channel solar energy into his body and then produce solar energy or use solar energy to have basically super strength, speed, agility, defense. He's very, you know, he's not as vulnerable to damage when he's in his, you know, solar form. So that's Roberto da Costa. And then we, of course, see a couple other characters that everyone knows and loves who grew up with the series, namely Jubilation Lee, or Jubilee, who has the ability to produce blasts of light, or she calls them fireworks. So she has the ability to produce blasts of light and energy. And of course, she has her visor, which she puts on because it's very bright what she does, which would damage someone's eyes. The visor is not just cool. It's a part of her equipment. And then we see Henry McCoy, Hank, as Beast, who, again, for those of you that may not know the show or the character, Henry was not always blue. He did not always look kind of like a giant blue Yeti. You know, Henry underwent a secondary mutation when he tried to basically eradicate his mutant gene. As a geneticist when he was young, because he could, at that point, pass for human. So he was trying to make himself human, and it backfired, and it turned him into even more visually a representation of who he was as a mutant. And this is something he has to cope with in life as someone who tried to hide it. Again, there are so many undertones about this, right? Trying to hide your identity, trying to hide your sexuality, trying to hide your heritage, your faith, right? What happens when that, you know, backfires, goes the opposite way, right? What happens if you're outed and you don't make that choice yourself, right? So Henry McCoy is a living embodiment of that perseverance, right? I am a mutant. I look like a mutant. I still am who I am, right? He's a scientist. He's a genius level IQ. He's a great character. Quotes Shakespeare. A lot of fun. So, you know, these are the main characters that we've seen in the show up into a certain point. And then we're reminded of other characters, Eric Lenscher or Magneto. And then introduced later on to the fan favorite Logan, also known as Wolverine. So Logan, everyone obviously listening here knows who Logan is, knows that Logan is a mutant that can heal. And because of that, he was experimented on by the Canadian government way, way back when. And his bones were laced with an indestructible metal called adamantium. Not vibranium, adamantium. It's a different compound, different properties. Adamantium is toxic. It would kill a normal person because it's essentially poisonous. So someone else in physical contact with the metal would die. But Logan could heal from this, and by that was able to undergo the transformation. And then we see the arch nemesis of the X-Men, Magneto, who, again, Magneto was a character who survived the Holocaust. He was Polish, and his family was taken by the Nazis and killed, aside from him. And he was raised in a concentration camp in Auschwitz. This is the story. This is real. And he discovered his ability to manipulate metal, right, when he was in the concentration camp and when he was subject to Nazi oppression. He found a way to liberate himself and defeat and kill a bunch of these Nazis, found another person who, you know, to escape and live with, and he and this woman started a family, raised a family in the countryside of a small, you know, at that point, I believe it was a Soviet vassal state, kind of like, Yugoslavia. So he was living there, and then obviously his children were mutants, and his wife was also a mutant. And the townspeople found out, and they went to, you know, Eric's home. He was called Magnus at the time. And while Eric was out working in the fields, he was a day laborer by trade, a mob killed and burnt his home and killed all his family. So Eric went nuts, had a breakdown, and just killed everybody. He killed all the people that killed his family. And then started this whole crusade of basically taking revenge. You know, he met Charles Xavier when Charles was visiting Israel, doing work at a hospital for people that were surviving the Holocaust. Again, I'm not making this up. And Charles Xavier was a psychic whose mutant gift was to read and enter and manipulate and control someone's mind. So Charles was working with survivors of the Holocaust to help them deal with the trauma they experienced, and met Eric, who was working there and kind of hiding out and, you know, disguising his own mutant gifts. So this wasn't a hospital of mutants. They were just two doctors who worked at this hospital who realized that each other, that they were unique, that they were both mutants. And so they became friends and connected on their shared heritage and identity as mutants. But Eric had a very different perspective on how to address the human-mutant coexistence. And this is really where X-Men was born, right? From the civil rights movement. So Charles Xavier was based off of the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s vision of nonviolent social justice. And Eric Lenscher, or Magneto, was based on the late Malcolm X's recommendation for addressing social issues, which was more aggressive, more direct, and sometimes violent. So again, there is a legacy to this property, to this content. It's not just cool. There's a subtext, there's a meaning, especially for those who are a part of protected classes who are subject to racism, discrimination, xenophobia, for hate that's directed at them because they're, quote, different. So, you know, these topics and these concepts are really kind of what make X-Men and the concept of mutant a very nuanced and very important thing to many people. So we see the story pick up. So essentially we have, and again, I'm not going to spoil anything in this review. I'm just kind of giving an overview. For those of you that don't know the series, we see a mutant, Roberto da Costa, get into a problem, and the X-Men save him, bring him back to the mansion, as they always do, and try and figure out, okay, where are these friends of humanity? What's going on? Right? Hijinks occur. They're trying to track down, you know, the leads. Roberto gets freaked out because, you know, hey, X-Men, you know, scary, Wolverine, yeah. He goes to a club, you know, dances around. We see some, you know, emotional and chemistry interactions with characters. And then we're introduced to, again, these zealots, these white human zealots. And this time, you know, Aurora and Scott go to visit the killer of their mentor and friend, Charles, in the form of Henry Gyrick, right? Who worked with Bolivar Trask on the Sentinel program. And Gyrick, very bluntly, and I love that Marvel is going there, very poignantly echoes a lot of what's been going on back in the 90s and today from the mouths of bigots and racists, right? This us or them notion, this we need to eradicate the quote them in order for us, quote, to be safe. Or this notion that my organization that I work for it really tries to dispel and to bring awareness to is this notion of they will replace us, the great replacement theory, right? This notion that other people are going to come to predominantly white countries to, quote, replace the white people that are there. Often the white people there having moved there from Europe to dominate land that was already possessed by indigenous people. We don't go in there. And this Bolivar Trask, who is, you know, shown in the show, is, again, Disney and Marvel, they're not shying away from the allegory here. This guy is a racist. This guy is a bigot. This guy is a xenophobe, right? And these things that he says are what modern day and back in the 90s, xenophobes will say, that they are going to replace us, right? That immigrants are going to steal our jobs, that black people and brown people want to replace us. That is all a part of this great replacement theory that is still espoused by modern day bigots and xenophobes. Right? These are things that happen. These are, you know, people are still killed today by mobs like we see in this show that are targeting mutants, right? But not a mutant, someone who they consider other. Anyways, again, I think this show will bring about these conversations, or it should. And that's kind of what I hope out of this podcast, that we'll have a discussion. So we see that I'm just going to go into little spoilers here, but not huge spoilers, because I kind of know from the comics everything that's already going on in the series, because they're being very close to the comics. Jean is pregnant. And that's not a spoiler, it was shown in the trailers. So we see Jean Grey is pregnant, very late in her pregnancy, and she is coping with the journey of motherhood, and we see her having some concerns about the life that her and Scott lead with the X-Men, which is quite dangerous. I mean, you see throughout this show, various things happen to Xavier's gifted youngsters. You know, from flying the Blackbird to the Blackbird, maybe let's say having some engine difficulties, to them in a battle with robots. Again, these are not spoilers. You see them in the trailer. You know, it's a very dangerous life that these heroes lead. You know, they are intentionally putting themselves in danger, but, you know, with Scott or Cyclops going to be a dad, you know, that does change things. Right? Any of you out there who have been blessed with parenthood, you know that. You know, I'm an uncle, I'm not a parent, but, you know, I kind of helped my sister through in, you know, in work. I'm kind of helping them, you know, as they start their journey as parents. It changes you. It, you know, even being an uncle or an aunt, it changes you. It changes how you think about the risks that you take. Right? And Scott and Jean are having to deal with that choice, you know, in the series so far. So, you know, we see battling, we see all this conflict going on. And then at the end of the first episode, they released two episodes, we see a familiar face come back to the mansion and say, bum, 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 that Charles Xavier's last will and testament was to give the mansion and everything he owned to Eric, his friend, his frenemy, his adversary. Oh boy. You know, and then we see the entire school assembled, all the X-Men assembled, you know, heroically and very, very symmetrically in front of a then gloating Magneto without his helmet on, saying, hey, guess what? This is all mine. And one thing I want to add, that's kind of my walkthrough of the episode, but I think it's so amazing that the showrunners and producers were able to develop the intro frame by frame from the original. Like, I will, at a later point, put up the intro from the original series and from the new series side by side. It is shot by, I mean, it is frame by frame. It's not film, so I can't call it shot for shot. But it is frame by frame, just like the original, which is absolutely astounding that they were able to do this. They probably had to do this off of a scan, or maybe they had the original animation. I mean, they're Marvel, maybe they did, but it's amazingly close to the original intro. And I think the original intro to the OG series was one of the best animation intros of all time, which means this is not only an homage, right, but a successor to the best animation intro of all time. So this is a updated best animation show intro of all time, and it is gorgeous. I could do an entire episode just on the intro to this show. I am so happy. Whoever did this, I want to talk to you. Shake your hand. I want like a screen print of some of these frames. I am so, so overjoyed when I saw this. I literally couldn't stop smiling. OMG. So cool. So I'm not going to, you know, go into detail in the second episode. I just kind of wanted to quickly get my thoughts on the first episode. I've watched both of them. Amazing. I'm really happy to see what they've done. You know, and again, I'll go into more detail in the second episode, and maybe I'll release a spoiler, because there's a lot of spoilers we could talk about here. And a lot of spoilers that those of us who read the comics know concerning certain situations that may likely arise. You know, and if you've read the comics, you know the source material. And based on what I've seen in this show, including what happens to some characters in episode 2, it is very close to the source material. Very close. Which you cannot say for most properties. But this is amazingly close to the source material based on what I've seen in just the last 2 episodes. And I'm so thankful as a fan and pleased to see what we're seeing. Because again, Marvel must be aware of what the X-Men mean and what their inspiration was. This is not a light show, right? I wouldn't say this is a kid's show. Right, you're dealing with very, very real and very, very prevalent issues like xenophobia, like homophobia, like racism, like anti-Asian hate, anti-LGBTQ plus hate. I mean, this is what the X-Men was always about. And they're going there. And that's so refreshing, because that's what's needed. Right? Stories like this allow us to reflect not only on ourselves, but on the societies we live in. For many reasons, that's one of the main draws that stories like this have, especially for people that need their stories told. And so I'm very happy to see what I've seen so far in this show. Again, this is not a spoiler review. I will do one of those later, but I just want to get it out there, get people talking. What do you think? You know, I'm taking this kind of analysis from a social justice aspect, since that's kind of my more research side, but also from a development and design. My background is in documentary film and film and audio editing. You know, this is something I've done for almost 20 years now. But my, you know, research focus and my work that I've done in my master's program was on social dynamics and history. Of communication, rhetoric, and issues that impact those who are marginalized. So I kind of think I'm in a unique position to talk about this series, and hopefully you enjoy it. So if you have any questions, please shoot me an email at SiriusX04@yahoo.com. And if you enjoy it, keep listening. And thanks again for joining.